This is chapter 6, The Men in the Maze. A great deal happened in a very short time. Mr. Benedict fell asleep, having been startled by the emergency bell, and toppled sideways into the ready arms of number 2. The children hadn't even time to trade looks of alarm before the bell stopped ringing, the lights went out, and Constance screamed. And then, after much jostling and elbow bumping and fumbling in the dark, Kate found her flashlight and switched it on, and Constance was gone. "Where'd she go?" Rainey cried.
"Maybe she went down to the landing, like we're supposed to," said Sticky.
"Somehow I doubt it," said Kate.
"Okay, all of you," said Rhonda urgently as number 2 tried to shake Mr. Benedict awake. "Hurry down to the landing at once. Milligan will meet you there, and he can find Constance if necessary. Number 2 and I will join you as soon as Mr. Benedict wakes up. Now run!"
The children stumbled from the room, Kate leading the way with her flashlight, and out into the dark hallway. With the thunder rumbling and wind moaning and rain beating on the roof, it would be quite impossible to hear someone sneaking up on them. And the children, aware of this, clung to one another in the darkness as they found their way to the stairs. Trembling at each fresh burst of thunder, they made their way down to the landing. Kate's flashlight beam passed over the bell, hanging silent and still, then fell upon a very sad face.
"Where's Constance?" Milligan said.
"What did I tell you?" Kate said to the boys.
"We were hoping she'd be here," said Rainey.
Milligan looked grim, even more so than usual.
"She may have slipped past me in the dark. This complicates things. No time to take you to a safe place. If she's in the maze, we might lose her any second. But I can't leave you here alone. You'll have to come down with me."
"Into the maze?" Sticky asked. "In the dark?"
"There's no help for it. Now grab onto my jacket, Sticky, and you others grab onto him. Whatever you do, stay with me. And Kate, turn off your flashlight. It will only help them find you."
"Them?"
"Yes," Milligan said. "They've come for you. Now don't speak."
None of the children spoke, though 2 of them gulped, and down into the maze they went. The lights were out here, too. They no longer came on when you entered a room. It was perfectly black, and in this perfect blackness they moved, stalking from room to room, until Milligan suddenly froze. The children caught their breath. At first, Rainey saw nothing. Then, looking behind him, he glimpsed 2 flashlight beams passing through one of the other rooms. He squeezed Sticky's arm. Sticky squeezed back even harder. From the direction of the flashlights came a sudden cry of pain. It was Constance's voice, followed by a thudding sound, as of someone falling to the floor. A man's voice hissed,
"I have her!"
"Come," Milligan whispered, hurrying toward the lights. The children followed, holding fast to one another. It was awkward walking so quickly together in the dark, and though Kate moved with the grace of a cat, the boys stumbled, trying to keep up. Perhaps they slowed Milligan's progress too much, for when they entered the room a few moments later, the flashlights were gone. The room lay black and still. It seemed quite empty except for a sharp, spicy fragrance that lingered in the air.
"I smell your cologne," Milligan said, speaking into the darkness. "I hope you like it," said a man's voice. The flashlight snapped on behind them, casting their shadows onto the wall. "Now please turn around. Turn around very slowly. Let's all stay nice and calm."
Milligan started to turn, but the terrified children, realizing they'd been tricked and not wanting to believe it, clutched at one another and did not move.
"That's a little too slow," said the voice. "Come on now. Let's have a look at you. Don't worry. We won't shine the lights in your eyes. I know that's uncomfortable.
Milligan pressed the children's shoulders and slowly turned them toward the voice. The man had spoken the truth. The flashlights were pointed downward. And in the glow cast by their beams, Rainey could just make out who carried them. He didn't know what he had expected to see, but it wasn't this. Two handsome men, one of them impressively tall, staring back at him with pleasant, welcoming expressions. The men wore tailored suits and large, expensive-looking silver watches, and over their suits they wore fine, long raincoats that dripped water onto the floor. Both smiled in an unexpectedly friendly way. In fact, their bright smiles, along with their elegant appearance, were, for an instant, so surprising and disarming that Rainey almost relaxed. Almost. But then his eyes fell on a lumpy canvas bag in the shadows behind them. Out of the bag poked one of Constance's tiny feet.
"Did you really think we couldn't hear you coming?" asked the tall man. He spoke cheerfully, as if he and the children were sharing a joke. "Why, you're a herd of buffalo. Now raise your hands above your heads, please."
Rainey was frightened, but he couldn't see why they should obey. The men seemed to carry no weapons, but Milligan did as the man said. Obviously, he knew something Rainey didn't. And so, with hearts galloping, Rainey and Kate let go of each other and raised their hands, too. Sticky, however, had grown confused in his fright and would not let go of Milligan's jacket.
"Please tell the bald boy to raise his hands," insisted the tall man.
"It's all right, Sticky," said Milligan. "Do as he says, child. Come now, let go."
At last, Sticky managed to release his grip. The moment he did so, and to the great surprise of everyone present, Milligan leaped toward an open doorway and vanished from the room. He had moved so quickly and so unexpectedly that no one had a moment to react before he was gone. The men looked at each other and burst out laughing. Rainey felt his mouth go dry. Sticky let out a whimper.
"Some protector," laughed the shorter man. "I must say, he did a fine job protecting himself. I've never seen anyone move so fast."
The tall man chuckled.
"Did he seem familiar to you at all?"
"Now that you mention it, he did," said the other, scratching his head. "Though I can't place how. Anyway, let's get this over with."
"What are you going to do with us?" Kate demanded. Though her legs trembled, her voice was defiant. The tall man tucked his flashlight under his arm and held out both hands, palms forward, in what was meant to be a comforting gesture.
"Now just stay calm," he soothed.
Meanwhile, the shorter man was doing exactly the same thing, tucking away his flashlight and holding out his hands. It was then that Rainey noticed that the men's huge silver watches were identical, and that, for some reason, they each wore two, one watch on each wrist.
"If you children stay nice and still," said the tall man, flashing a sympathetic smile, "I promise this won't hurt a bit."
"Oh, come on, let's tell the truth for once," said the other, "just for kicks."
The tall man rolled his eyes.
"All right, the truth is that this will hurt a lot. But if you hold still," he said, shaking his arms to clear the watches from his suit cuffs, "I promise it won't hurt long."
Rainey felt Kate and Sticky stiffen beside him. They didn't know what was coming, but they knew it was going to be awful. The men started laughing again. Rainey heard an electrical hum. Abruptly, the laughter ceased. It was interrupted by two odd whistling sounds, upon which the tall man closed his eyes, dropped his flashlight with a clatter, and sank to the floor. The other did exactly the same, slumping unconscious on top of his partner. The flashlights, rolling free, sent their bright beams willy-nilly about the room. One of the beams settled on the doorway behind the fallen men.
where Milligan now stood holding a tranquilizer gun. He stepped over to pluck two tiny feathered darts from the men's shoulders, saying as he did so, "Remember, children, for every exit, there is also an entrance." The dining room seemed an altogether different place now. The rain had let up, the drafts were gone, and bright sunlight streamed through the window. Yet the mood in the room was dark. On the table, the children's breakfast lay just as they had left it. Only an hour had passed since Rainey asked Milligan for tea and honey. But the teapot and honey jar might well have been props in a play, so unreal and insignificant did they seem now. Everyone sat at the table except Constance, who was sitting on the floor. The men in the maze had given Constance quite a shock, an actual shock, delivered by way of wires that flicked like snakes' tongues from their watches, she'd said, and she remained somewhat addled. Her wispy blonde hair stuck out in all directions like a small child's drawing of a sun, and her eyes seemed to roam about independently of each other. Moments before, she had walked in a circle around her chair, attempting, without success, to sit in it, then dropped to her bottom on the floor, where she said she believed she would sit for the time being. Mr. Benedict was watching her with concern. "Are you sure she's all right, Rhonda? You examined her carefully." Rhonda nodded. "She'll feel better soon." "Okay, who were those men?" Kate blurted out. "Professional kidnappers," Mr. Benedict said. "Crafty fellows who worked for the sender. You'll recall he uses children to send his messages." "So he captures them?" Kate said. "He has subtler methods, too, but some children, yes, he captures. His scouts have an uncanny nose for vulnerable children. Don't worry. They've been deposited far from here and will be unconscious for quite some time, thanks to Milligan." Number two clucked her tongue. "If only Constance hadn't gone into the maze. Constance, why on earth did you decide to go down there, anyway?" "I didn't decide to," Constance snapped. "I was trying to get down to the landing like Mr. Benedict told us to." The boys looked at Kate, who acknowledged with a shrug that she'd been wrong. "But I tiptoed down one flight of steps too many. Then I heard someone behind me, so I went deeper into the maze to get away. But they found me," she said with a shiver. "They definitely found me." Number two patted her shoulder. "Don't worry, Connie. You're safe now." "Don't call me Connie," she said crossly. She rose unsteadily from the floor and made another attempt at the chair. This time she managed to climb into it. "I'm glad you're feeling better, Constance," said Mr. Benedict. "But won't those men come back?" Rainey asked. "It's possible," said Mr. Benedict. "Which is why we must work quickly. As it is, I'm hoping we can avoid detection long enough to launch our investigation." "And if we can't?" said Constance, as if she rather expected failure. "If we can't, child, all is lost," Mr. Benedict cried. Instantly he looked regretful. In a softer tone he said, "I'm sorry to raise my voice. Failure in this instance is an upsetting prospect. Now, please, let me explain. These men intended to take you to a school called the Learning Institute for the Very Enlightened." "I've heard of that place," Rainey said. "Some kids from the orphanage wanted to go there, but Mr. Rutger said it was against policy and wouldn't allow it." "Doubtless it was, at least against his policy. Aside from being the orphanage director, Mr. Rutger is headmaster of your academy, is he not? I believe he gets paid per student." "Even those with special tutors?" asked Rainey. Mr. Benedict gave him a significant look. Rainey was indignant. "So that's why he wouldn't send me to an advanced school. He wanted me on the academy's rolls, just out of greed." "It's possible he thought it was in your best interest," Mr. Benedict said. "Greed often helps people think of reasons they might not discover on their own. At any rate, it was in your best interest not to go. The Institute will admit any child, but it is particularly fond of orphans and runaways. In fact, as you can see, such children are sometimes taken to the Institute, whether they wish to go or not. The hidden messages are coming from the Institute, aren't they? Rainey said.
I believe the school was created for that very purpose, said Mr. Benedict. Every so often the sender must have new children, and the Institute receives a steady stream.
I can't believe the sender gets away with it, Sticky said.
He's very cunning, Sticky. The Institute is a highly secretive, well-guarded facility. Not the usual thing for a school, you know. Yet it enjoys a wonderful reputation. The hidden messages have convinced everyone of the Institute's great virtue.
There's an often repeated phrase in the hidden messages, Rhonda explained. Dare not defy the Institute. Obviously, it's a kind of defense mechanism.
Thus, the Institute has completely escaped regulation, Mr. Benedict said. It operates according to its own rules, without any interference.
That's outrageous, Kate exclaimed. I can't believe no one goes looking for those kids.
I'm afraid runaways and orphans vanish even more easily than government agents do, said Mr. Benedict. Lest you forget, the missing aren't missing. They're only departed.
The children looked at one another, appalled.
I'm glad Milligan was here to protect us, Sticky said with a shudder. The Institute is the last place I'd want to be.
At this, Mr. Benedict looked somewhat uncomfortable. He cleared his throat.
Yes, well, the scouts won't carry you to the Institute against your will, it's true. But to the Institute, you must certainly go. You are to be my secret agents.